Caught Offside with Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney.
Goes down well by Zagadou. Another hit, and the ball has dropped this, and the rebound is smashed out by Roddick. The US lead late on a Burgos. What a turnaround!
Oh, yes! Caught offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan, Andrew Gunling. JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
I'm okay. I was a bit concerned when I got into the studio this evening to see you staring wistfully out the window.
Well, I was on the phone, and that's my phone spot.
Okay. You looked like you were sad, deep in contemplation, almost like the words of
I live deep in contemplation.
Sure, but the words of Christian Eriksen had irked you.
I didn't need that.
You'd been reflecting on a weekend, because I do feel as if your emotional support group were our listeners at the not a watch party
right
at the Hairy Lemon. And once they were gone and couldn't serve you liquor anymore, I mean, Andrew from North Carolina was almost like a personal support liquor guy for you.
You're right. It was a good place to be after having lost a game like that, despite the fact that it was a lot of Liverpool fans that were there.
A lot of Spurs fans there, too.
There were a lot of Spurs fans there, which is, it's important because misery loves company. And
the last few days, you've had a chance to reflect in solitary confinement, and that's got to hurt.
And you lean on the things that that help you through. So American soccer fans of teams that play in Europe, you have to find your own community. It's not like when I'm an Eagles fan in Philadelphia, I open my front door and I'm among my people.
Mm.
As a Tottenham fan, I know Spurs fans are out there in force in this country, but you got to find a way to build your community. And podcasting is everything.
Sure.
So you listen to the podcasts of your guys talking about it. And, that's to feel that community. I'm sure you've been going Liverpool crazy in the same way, talking to people and listening to stuff.
Liverpool content. My father, who's on vacation in lovely Derry today, texts me. He goes, "The weather's not great here, but what does it matter when you're the champions of Europe?" That was the text.
Great point.
Yeah. Also, it's in terms of podcasts, it's downloadable therapy. Now, I would say you surely must have been lifted by that excellent performance by the U.S. under-20s yesterday.
It's amazing. Now, look, nothing is going to, in the immediacy, is going to make up for Spurs losing the Champions League final. But it is amazing how it's just all right, back at it. There's no... that was the end of the club season. And in any other walk of life, there's now a break of some kind.
Not for us.
And it's just I'm looking at my rundown here of everything we're going to talk about tonight, and it's in the summer, it only, especially here in the U.S. where the international game is the game, kind of.
Yeah.
No offense to MLS, but I'm just saying.
Lots of offense, but go on.
No, but you know how U.S. soccer is here.
Yeah.
It's the show. There's really a shocking amount to talk about. That was, at the start of the podcast, the winning goal that you heard there for the U.S. under-20s as they really surprised France in an awesome game, which we'll talk about. We also are obviously going to talk about the Women's World Cup, because I believe this will be our final podcast before the U.S.'s first game.
So we have a little look forward.
Yep.
We've selected some contenders. We're going to talk about the U.S. women, obviously, although I'm at the point where I need them to kick a ball in anger in this tournament before I can make any more judgments on them.
I know.
And also we'll look at dark horses.
Yeah.
We selected our own individual dark horses. My dark horse, not going to tell you what it is yet, but it's a team that even if you don't think they're going to go far in this tournament or go to the final or win it, they're must watch.
Yeah. And then I'll tease this straight out right now, because I don't know if people come to us for this kind of thing, but I want to make sure people know that we are going to address it. My red card tonight is the Neymar situation, because
okay.
I do feel like it's a thing that bears mentioning, and there's weird complexities to it, and it's something that I feel like we got to talk about. So I'm telling people right now, if you're downloading this for that, then you can fast forward right now, because I can guarantee you that will be on the podcast later.
Okay.
But we start, JJ, with all the USA stuff, because there's so much of it. No, so we're sitting here right now. It's 8:07 Eastern time. The U.S. and Jamaica men are at the half currently. It's 0-0. So I figure this would be kind of cool for us to almost just give like a running commentary as we're going through the podcast. We have the game on two monitors right in front of us where we can just sort of give live commentary on the podcast of what we're seeing. I'll say this, from what we saw in the first half,
not good.
It was a truly disconcerting performance in a way that I don't necessarily know we've seen so far under Berhalter. They've had some games where it's been shaky at times, but not like this. Zach Steffen didn't look great. Almost caught out for an attempt from midfield for Jamaica. Had another one that he flubbed that almost created another scoring chance for Jamaica. If Jamaica were just like a little bit more, what's the right word? I was going to say competent around goal. That feels a little bit harsh. But yeah, essentially, then the U.S. could be in a real hole right now. And the U.S. have wasted some chances of their own.
Well, it's a good job, too, that it's 1 a.m. in Dusseldorf. It's probably 2 a.m. in Dusseldorf. So there's probably no chance that the brains trust there are watching this. And so
after Stefan's move, his loan move from Manchester
City.
Yeah. To Dusseldorf. So they're about to kick off the second half right now. So we obviously are going to keep one eye on that, and we will
About the U-20s, though. Positivity.
Let's talk about the U-20s, because that was such a fun game from them. And I wanted to ask you right out of the gate about it, because I saw you had, not a back and forth, but you responded to one of my favorite U.S. soccer Twitter accounts, Arthur Kogan. I think he's great. His assessment was that the U.S., not only was it like a fun win, but they deserved it because they really took it to what we would say is probably a better French team at times throughout that game. But you took exception with some of that.
No. I just thought he, and to be fair to Arthur, he did clarify what he meant. He felt in the second half, and particularly after the second goal, after France went 2-1 up, the US played with a little bit more abandon. I didn't think they dominated France by any measure. In fact, there was a period when I thought France were going to pull away, particularly in the at the start of the second half. But this was the perfect blend of what the US is. That French team has players like Diaby, who has 25 appearances for PSG senior, you know, their first team. They've got Zagadou, who, all right, maybe not didn't have a great time at Borussia Dortmund, but it was starting for them for a period during the Bundesliga season. And there's a lot of US players that aren't at that stage yet. And this is a French team that is better than this US team. But what this US team did was marry two things that are absolutely crucial, Andrew. If you look at the goals, look at the opener. It's a turnover, and it's a great run by Ledesma, and then a perfectly weighted pass. So that is marrying commitment and skill together. And that's what all those US goals were. Now, they got a lot of luck on the winner, but if you watch the lead up to it, we're winning our tackles. If you watch the lead up to the equaliser and that wonderful piece of skill from Wea to slide in Soto again, we're winning our tackles. Arthur had an XG graph, which I mean, said that France had marginally the better expected goals. But yeah. I mean, on the preponderance of chances, I thought it was pretty even, to be fair. I thought France were less of a team than our team were. Less cohesive. Less committed. And look, I'm going to play a clip from Julien Laurent now, who kind of backs up what I'm saying here. It is not an insult in the international game to be, you know, nobody's patting you on the head and saying, oh, you're gritty, you're more of a team. We have, in this side, a nice marriage of skill, Wea, Soto, Ledesma, and a nice kind of complement of the classic things that we associate with US soccer, which is never giving up, grittiness, gaudiness. And I think this is what Julien speaks to.
Oh, I love that front three of Conrad de la Fuente, Tim Weah and Soto. I thought they played really well. You saw on the two first goals, especially the movement of Soto, the ball through. I thought they had great intent. And again, just to come back on my last point, that the main quality for the US team is that togetherness and the fact that they fight for each other and play for each other. And at that level, it's a key part of what you can offer.
It totally is. I'm always going on about the Liverpool midfield. It's not the most creative midfield in the world, but it wins its tackles and it gets the ball to the players who can do the dangerous things. There is nothing wrong with that. But the idea that we pass them off the park in the traditional sense of dominating a team simply isn't true. There's still some failings there. Look at the goal we gave away for the equaliser right before half time. Like, the ball is coming to the left-sided player. I can't remember who it was right now, but it doesn't really matter. And he just shanks it, gives it straight back. He's out of position. and the French are in. Our goalkeeper comes out, leaves the whole goal open instead of just banking on his defender and closing the angle. And there we are. It's 1-1 in the flash of an eye. This French team are much more experienced. We still have that naivete that's going to make teams, you know, you're still going to concede two goals to the like of the French. But that was a great, gritty performance married with the skill needed to beat a team like France.
Yeah.
No problem saying that.
And you know, there were moments throughout that like really exemplified what you're talking about, that exact marriage. Even the third goal, like you said, there, you know, it took some luck. Like,
sure.
It was poor goalkeeping.
But it's your full back in the 90-something or the 80-something minute bombing forward to blast one.
But like you say, in the build-up, like a great ball. Who was it? Was it Lainez who came in, who played a great ball? And then Pomacall was kind of slow to react to it. But still, the grittiness. So now it's a 50-50. He wins it.
Correct.
You know, and then we see again, okay, so now a blast from about 30 yards out. It's blocked. But was it Weah who then collected that one and then fired his own shot on target, and then like more grittiness. Renix never gives up on the play. He's right there to pounce, doesn't give the keeper a chance to grab that rebound. So, you know, you saw that throughout.
And you need that. International level is not the highest level of football, guys. That's not even the highest level of football those guys will have played this year. I'm saying that right now. You could see it with the French. They're not cohesive. They're not a unit. They played like individuals. Our guys were much better drilled, and Tabor Amos deserved credit for that.
Yeah.
He takes a lot of flack. He deserves some credit here.
And, you know, we have to say, I mean, we've spoken this long about it without really talking about the performance from Sebastian Soto, who was, he was fantastic.
He's the best player falling over to finish a ball that I've ever seen.
Well, you're right. His first goal was kind of like a diving curler.
Both goals. But what he's trying to do is open up his body quite correctly so he can find the far corner. And Andrew, he did it every time. And the second one, I thought his first touch when Weah played him in, which was the body's wave of Weah and the outside of the foot pass. If you're a Celtic fan watching that, you are absolutely spitting fire at Neil Lennon for the way this kid was treated. He is, I'm telling you, get your checkbook out. A good coach will make him into a brilliant player. And Soto there, right place, right time. Bit of a goosey first touch, but it actually brought him in front of the French defender, and he, in classic fashion, falls over as he finishes. But he's an excellent finisher from what we've seen so far. This is just a good bunch of guys. Now, I'm about to temper all that. Can I do this very quickly?
Yeah, of course.
You know Bobby Warshaw?
Yeah.
Bobby Warshaw, that
MLS soccer?
Yeah, that earnest young man of MLS, as I describe him. He penned an excellent blog piece about this current U20 team and the previous cycles that reached quarterfinals, and challenged the general view that you know, automatically by the fact of its almost exclusive European base, etc., or that it's not European base, but obviously that it doesn't have a US college base at all. It's all of a pro base.
Right.
That this team is an indicator of the vast strides US soccer has made. One of his opinions that rang truest to me was this. The idea that recent U20 World Cup results make some sweeping statement about the state of soccer in the country is precarious. Not to mention the question about whether U20 World Cup results matter at all. Like, what do me and you always say? We want our guys playing first team football week in, week out, wherever they are. Where does the current gap in perception happen then? It seems to me that there are two big things that play a huge role. Look at how many teenagers we have in Europe right now. Maybe the fact that more players on the current US under-20 team play in Europe than ever before correlates to player quality. Maybe Alex Mendes, Richie Ledesma and Sebastian Soto, who play for Freiburg, PSV and Hanover respectively, are better than Fail Haber, Kleschen and Sturgis, who played at UCLA, Seton Hall and Clemson heading into the World Cup. Or maybe the world is more globalised now. Maybe European teams spend more on scouting and people travel more. Does the number of players in Europe indicate a change in player quality or a change in the way the world works? Right, like, it's hard to me to say right now that any of those players are automatically going to have a better career than Benny Failhaber or Sasha Kleschen had.
Right.
I just think we need to rein it in a little bit as well. You know, we've had three very good cycles before at U20 level getting to quarterfinals.
I get what you're saying. However, like, you're right. You can't predict if Ledesma will be a
And I don't like doing it.
No, you're right. But you have to say, though, that this is now what we've wanted U.S. soccer to be.
Yeah,
so,
but are we saying
the track that these guys are on will hopefully get them to a higher level quicker?
Yeah.
Now, it's not going to be the case for all of them, but I think these U20 World Cups are to try to identify the couple guys that could make a real impact quickly. Like, the World Cup qualifying cycle is going to start soon, and these guys, when the next World Cup rolls around, many of them will be in their early part of their prime age-wise. So you'll see some of these guys. Like, I thought Chris Richards, in an area right now in central defense for the U.S. that is, it's up for grabs. Like, you know, we think we're identifying certain young players like Miazga who will make an impact, maybe Carter Vickers, but it's up for grabs right now, especially if John Brooks can't stay healthy. So Richards playing well and his move to Germany. Like, these are good signs for this young team right now. It's the right culture that you're trying to build.
Yeah, I just think, you know, we should be excited about it, but we shouldn't go over the top with it because we have been here before.
Yeah, but that was interesting what you read, because I understand a lot of that, because it's just what we've wanted to see from the U.S., and it's coming to fruition. Guys who are playing professionally younger rather than playing in a lower level, which is really what college is.
Sure, you just want, like me and you always say it, I think any team that came in for Christian Pulisic, we wanted to make sure that he was going to be playing week in, week out. That remains the case.
Yeah. By the way, I don't know if you were just watching, but I think it was Will Trapp who just had a terrible giveaway in an awful spot for the U.S. It led to a 2-on-1 for Jamaica. I couldn't tell who it was, but the shot was put on net. It was saved nicely, but had the pass been made, could have been 1-on-1 with the keeper. It was, I think, if it wasn't Will Trapp, people will know by now, I'm sure, who it was. I thought it was him, but every time I look over, I feel like I'm just like not seeing good things happening.
Yeah, we're approaching the hour and it's still nil-nil.
I mean, this game, look, ultimately, this is not... I mean, look at the squad that's out there tonight. This team was not necessarily put out there to win this game. They're put out there for Berhalter to try to figure out who's going to be on the rest, who's going to fill out this roster.
Mm.
You know, how many guys who started tonight will be starting the first game of the Gold Cup? But maybe Paul Areola, I don't know, maybe Miazga, maybe...
Maybe Sargent.
You think? I don't think so. That would surprise me.
I don't know.
Really,
he likes him. He wants to get him in.
Well, I think he'll make the squad, but I don't think he'll be starting the first game. I think that's still Josie Altidore's spot.
But I think he can... Well, we're going to get into an argument now about positions, but I think he can play in a different position, just off the striker. He doesn't have to be...
Interesting.
Yep.
Revolutionary, even. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, Lord.
Jamaica almost just curled one in from about 20 out.
You can watch it on Fox Sports 1 right now.
Every
also.
Time I look over, man, it's just like Jamaica, they're doing something. They're generating
some
kind
of
attack.
They've been good. Much maligned on this podcast, Jamaica. I remember getting emails not so long ago. Don't talk about them enough. And when we do, I say we should beat them all the time. You got to give me the zapper.
Yeah, you haven't learned the lessons of the past.
All right.
Clearly. All right, JJ, let's start talking now about the Women's World Cup. Because it begins this Friday, where the home nation France will kick things off against South Korea, I believe. Let's start with the U.S. Our women in action coming up next Tuesday. We have it broken down into a couple different categories here. The first one being, who is your key player for this team? And this is such a difficult question to ask because there's so many, like they're all key. There's so many great players. There's so many. Timeless, legendary players.
Not for me.
Team.
I've been consistent with this one.
Oh, I wonder if we say the same. No, we couldn't be saying the same thing here.
Megan Rapinoe.
All right, different.
She remains at 33, the creative hub of the team. At the last World Cup, she had created the most chances for the team prior to the quarterfinal win over China, which she missed, and we all panicked. I remember panicking with you. How are we going to break this team down? We won 1-0 in the end, but still, that's the kind of creative fulcrum she is. And I know I've spoken about Tobin Heath taking that on, but I still think that Tobin Heath's emergence at 31, my God. But you know what I mean. We feel as if Tobin Heath is now coming of age a little bit more, and that can happen to forward players. But she's the side's de facto number 10. Brilliant set-piece deliveries and the supply line for that attack. 13 goals and 17 assists for the US since 2017. That is just incredible production. I personally don't believe the U.S. women's national team can retain the World Cup without her in top form. This is what she told ESPN. I don't feel like we're defending that 2015 title, but I think we defend everything all the time. I think we're seen as one of the most consistent teams and sort of historically one of the best teams in the world. So I feel like we're always wanting to keep that place in the world, but it feels like, honestly, a totally different team. Obviously, the ones that were there, we sort of know that we have that, but you don't get any extra points for defending anything in the past. You need to go win another one. Megan Rapinoe for me.
So I'm actually going to go with Lindsay Horan for some of the same reasons that you went with Megan Rapinoe.
Can I say if that was in Ireland, it would be Lindsay Horan?
Well, I mean, you're the same guy who refers to the last name Mahoney as Mahoney.
It's Mahoney, yeah. What? How? And Costello is Costello.
Really?
Yeah.
I actually, the other ones, I think you're crazy, but that one I think I like more.
Costello.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Flows better.
It does flow better because maybe we're saying it right.
See, I went with Lindsay Horan because, look, ultimately, you're right. Megan Rapinoe is certainly a creative hub on the team, but she is certainly not the only one. And I think Horan is now becoming more of that player. She plays more centrally. Rapinoe's typically now more out on the left side. Horan is more in the middle. And I think from what we've seen from her, it's hard to know exactly how NWSL performances will translate into the Women's World Cup. But 24 years old, I just feel like this could be the moment where she establishes herself as the next true great American player. MVP of the NWSL last season, 14 goals, led her team to the championship where they lost to North Carolina. She's got the ability from midfield to control the game. She makes the attack for the U.S. work, at least that's how it's appeared to be during their last several matches. Here's what Jonathan Tannenwald wrote about her in the Philadelphia Inquirer. He says, Lavelle's passing skills make her the American's best pure number 10, while Horan's mix of scoring, passing, and defensive work make her the team's best overall player. That is high praise. If the U.S. wins it all and Horan is used to her full potential, she'll become the favorite to win FIFA Player of the Year. Wow. I mentioned how she's only 24, but really, JJ, she's an older 24. We're talking before about young American players on the men's side now making the move straight away to Europe. You don't see that much on the women's side. Mm. You did with her.
She was at PSG.
At 18 years old, she went off to PSG. So she may be 24, but she's like a seasoned pro. So I think this is her moment. I really do. By the way, things have happened. Jamaica have scored.
Oh, sweet Lord. On the hour, 1-0, Jamaica. And you know, thankfully, you know that U.S. soccer Twitter will react with grace, patience.
Jeff Carlisle says, Shamar Nicholson with an absolute laser past Stefan. That had been coming for a while as Jamaica has looked the more threatening side, especially this half. Yes, cosign.
By the way, how would you describe Manchester, or how would you pronounce Manchester United legend Kevin, M-O-R-A-N? How would you say his last name?
Moran.
Oh my God. Let's move on. Moran.
Well, I mean, what do you want me to say, Mr. Aluminium?
We have to get Lindsay Horan on the show, because I want to talk about investigate her Irish past and the way she pronounces her name.
All right, the next question here, JJ, for the U.S. women. What is your greatest strength for this team?
I can't keep saying this, and I don't know what else I can say. It's the attack.
Yep.
It's comfortably the attack. I read an article today which really stated it perfectly. The U.S. have more attackers than they know what to do with, or that they can fit on the field, rather, is a better way, because I'm sure Jill Ellis knows her preferred attack. But there are spaces, there are players who will sit on the bench who would start for every other country
In
this tournament.
And by the way, not just start for them, but then that may be like the second or third best attack in the tournament.
Right. That is how stacked we are. So it's the attack for me. On this podcast, you've heard us speak ad nauseum about it. I don't know what else there is to say. I will save a little bit because we talk about weaknesses later on, and I've tried to come up with something else, and it may be slightly linked to that.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, the U.S., over their last five games, they've scored 22 goals. And they're averaging over four goals a game heading into this competition, so that is always good. Yeah, the three that you talk about, so, I mean, up front, obviously, Morgan in the middle, and then Rapinoe out on the left, Heath out on the right. But like the three that can come off the bench, Carly Lloyd, Mallory Pugh, Kristen Press. Like, it's
Kristen
almost...
Kristen Press, maybe not so much Mallory Pugh, because Mallory Pugh has kind of just broken in over the last few years. But Kristen Press, who was around in 2015, she must think, is my chance ever going to come to lead this team as a goal scorer? Probably it's going to take a few more years.
Yeah, I mean... I don't know. Some of it may be like, how many years does Megan Rapinoe have? Carly Lloyd, while she is a sub, she's 36, so this will probably be her last World Cup, you have to assume. JJ, I'm just looking. We'll get back to the U.S. women in a sec, but I'm just looking at more reaction.
Oh, Lord. What are you doing?
Well, I mean, people are by the time this is out, the U.S.-Jamaica game will be over.
And we won't have time to react.
And the U.S. have played poorly. So people who are downloading this podcast right now think that we've done some kind of USA emergency.
They love hearing
podcast.
Yeah, I know.
So we do have to talk about it. People are going to be listening to this thinking that we will. The number one theme right now from people is just the sloppiness in possession.
Our friend Tom Fitz texts me, who are these guys? They can't pass 5 yards.
Yeah. Again, I guess the only thing that I can lean on here, and the U.S. do have another tune-up match against Venezuela before the Gold Cup actually begins, but you just have to keep telling yourself that this is not the team. So for whatever freak out and panic there's going to be in the wake of this game, you just have to remember, do you see Weston McKennie out there? I don't. Do you see Tyler Adams? I don't. Do you see Christian Pulisic? No. Like, this is not... So, yes, this is bad. I also don't want to be patronizing to Jamaica, who have played very well in Gold Cups past and have been a thorn in the American side. This is to just see that kind of sloppiness in possession is something that you just...
Well, it's a bugbear. Even when we have our full team out, we can't keep the ball like we'd like to. Yeah. So.
So we'll continue to watch this. They're in the 65th right now. And it's
you will. Day. I'm not watching it. I'm focusing. Okay.
All right. Last question here for the U.S. women. So we talk about their strength, which is... I would say that it is for both of us a pretty easy question. We both agreed that it was the attack. This one I thought was really difficult, identifying their biggest weakness.
Yeah. I'm going to start and say a couple of things. The first one, defensively. We've already said this team hasn't been stress tested defensively, and that remains the case. Qualifying a little bit on the road, but in the She Believes Cup, not so much. Our issues over the fullbacks and a converted fullback in Crystal Dunn remain. One that I pondered, Andrew, I pondered.
Yeah.
Julie Ertz is a midfielder now, but is she a midfielder because that is her best position, or is it a means to screen that defence? Is Jill Ellis aware that it's not, or it's going to come under duress and they're going to need a defensive midfielder in there? Allow me to add one more concern to the mix that isn't defence or goalkeeper, which we've spoken about before. The U.S. attack is its strength, but it has only scored once in its last 4 games on European soil. We're going to France. Mm-hmm. Add to that Alex Morgan, a goal-scoring centurion, scored once in the last tournament, didn't have a great Olympics. She'll have something to prove.
Now, she was playing hurt, if I can remember correctly.
Yeah. Just saying.
You're right.
Because
totally
it's kind of hard to pick deficiencies.
Ultimately, that's the thing, is even their greatest weakness is still, it's still a position of strength. We just have to find
something
here.
We're nitpicking now.
So here's my thing, and I'll go to a similar area of the field that you just talked about. I'm going to read now from Caitlin Murray, who wrote this at Yahoo Sports, who also has a great book out about the U.S. women, which I recommend. But she writes this. She said, the team's fullbacks are converted forwards who bomb up the field. The center of the pitch doesn't have a stay-at-home holding midfielder as Julie Ertz is encouraged to fly forward and join
the attack.
The Americans undoubtedly are going to score goals in France. That's what they're built for. The question is how much they will concede in the process. After all, despite everything that Jill Ellis has tried, one simple soccer truth remains. Bunkering often works. That's especially true when the defending team can be quick on the counterattack.
Caitlin Murray Allardyce there.
Or Caitlin Murray Sundhaga, from the way that Sweden has approached the U.S. in the past.
But you do, at points in the tournament, and at points in tournaments, both men's and women's, whatever grade, you do have to be pragmatic.
I mean, remember what Sweden did. It's the reason that Hope Solo was basically kicked off the team when she called them cowards afterwards, when they put 10 players in front of the net.
She said it wasn't football.
I mean, like, you could sense the frustration from the U.S. because they had a hard time breaking through. And, like, the worry is... You know, teams are going to do that to the U.S. and will it lull the U.S. forward? Like we talk about Julie Ertz. Okay, yeah, maybe she's a shield for the defense, but she's also an attacker.
I know, but
so all of a sudden, are you going to look at the middle of the field and see no one there? And there's going to be 2-on-1 opportunities on the counter if they're not careful.
Yeah, and we remember, I think, Germany Mexico was the classic counterattacking game that it was in the men's World Cup, and your two center mids who are so high up the field get caught out by one ball, and then the next thing, your back four is totally exposed to your two central defenders. And I'm thinking, if Crystal Dunn goes, wouldn't it be nice for Ertz to slide in and fill that gap? If Kelly O'Hara goes, who also hasn't played that much because of injury this season, can Julie Ertz slide across and do that? Or at least have someone who's going to do it? That's the proper football man. The proper football man, if he was managing this team, would go, Julie, all right, what are you going to do? You're going to slide across, all right? Hold there, dictate tempo, don't get pulled out of position, all right?
You know, it's sad that even when we're talking about the American team, proper football man is still British.
He's still... Yeah, but you don't want me doing American soccer voice.
No, I really don't. It's humiliating, it's condescending, and it's just mean-spirited. So, yeah, that would be my biggest concern with the U.S. because those moments are going to happen, and it's not fair to... Because everyone...
We are making this up, though.
You're right.
We haven't seen it yet.
But it's not fair how everyone continues to be putting this spotlight on Alyssa Nair in particular.
Totally unfair.
It is unfair because she might
she's
be
not
excellent.
Another woman. Because she's not Hope Solo.
Right. But the thing that you wonder about, okay, so if teams are going to basically say we have to get the U.S. on the counter, you know, there's going to be these long ball moments where you just have to hope that if Alyssa Nair, she's going to gamble. You know, if she comes running out, how quick will her reaction time be? Will she be first to the ball, or is it going to create some frightening opportunities for the opposition?
And you've got to say her starting position will want to be, you know, on the edge of her 18 for a lot of the times when we dominate possession in games. But again, these are concerns that are, I guess we just have to wait and see. And we might not see them until the Sweden game in the group.
I can't wait for it to start, though. It was so much fun 4 years ago.
It was, and I do feel like it's one of those where you really grow into it and it consumes you, but you just want it to start, and especially with a team who are dominant in their region.
And a team that we like, we really love this team. We know all of these players. You know, this is a team that has had tremendous success.
And it allows us actually to be arrogant because we are good.
Right.
We deserve this.
We can take off the electric dog collar.
Right.
We don't need it for this because we're proudly arrogant. And now, on that note, let's talk about the competition.
Okay.
So who do you believe the U.S. should be most worried about?
I need you to have the Seinfeld drop ready to go. So I'm going to go with France, Andrew. Or should I say Olympic Lyonnais, am I right? But seriously, France. Lyon is where the team... Basically, the spine of the team comes from Lyon. Lyon is where the final will be. Mm-hmm. And Lyon as a club are the power brokers of world football right now. To me, it is crazy to look at this stacked team of Champions League winners and point anywhere else for a team that can take back the crown from the US women's national team. To me, they are the top of the tree in terms of contenders. Should they both advance in their groups and win their round of 16, a quarterfinal showdown awaits. How unbelievable would that be? The spine, as I said, of this Lyon side is the strength of the French side. From centre-half, Wendy Renard, to the best midfielder in world football, Amandine Henry, to Eugène Le Sommet up front. This is as strong a spine as exists in the game. And they are prolific winners. 4 Champions League titles in a row. They are at home. That brings pressure, but also partisan crowds wherever they go. And think how France did in Euro 2016. The men all the way to final, and think how the men did 20 years ago or 21 years ago now in France. Like, so the French support will be huge for them. And think about us in Canada. It did help that Canada was accessible for our American outlaws. There are other challengers who have legitimate claims to be ready to beat the Yanks, but none are as well equipped or in as good a form domestically as Les Bleus. I couldn't look beyond them.
So you're right to do so. I'm looking right now at the odds from Caesars to win the Women's World Cup. The U.S. are number one at plus 175. France are number two at plus 350. Germany are third, plus 650. However, if you look at the 538 projections, they give the U.S. an 18% chance of winning the tournament. France, they actually give a 20% chance. So they do have France ahead.
And then Bernie Sanders for the bronze, is it?
Well, Germany.
Sorry, yeah, Germany.
And then the team that they have fourth at 10% is who I have, JJ, England. Now, everything you just said about France is correct.
Before you begin,
yeah,
England are feeling themselves. I've been listening to some podcasts.
Uh-huh.
They are feeling themselves. Rachel Yankee, their former player, had this to say, and it could have been Stuart Pearce, Lee Dixon, or, well, Paul Merson maybe. It could have been any of the pundits prior to a Men's World Cup.
It's down to the players, but they've definitely, there's no team out there, I know France have said it, but there's no team out there that England should fear. I think that they can go and play against everybody else. And the fact, the biggest thing is that every other team knows that England can be a danger and England can be a worry. So I think that builds confidence in the squad.
Well, she's not wrong. Now, according to FIFA World Rankings, they're third. So, like, obviously the U.S. and France and Germany, too, are great teams. But England feel that they're a great team, too, that the last World Cup was kind of their coming out party. They finished third in that tournament. Who knows? I mean, they could have wound up in the final had it not been for an own goal in extra time against Japan.
Which was cruel. But
it really was.
I still think there's three teams ahead of them for this.
But they're in. But if they wind up in the semifinals, no one will be surprised.
Okay.
Just in looking at them, I guess if the women that you want to look out for Nikita Paris. She recently actually moved to Lyon, the team that you've been going on and on about from Manchester City.
Oh, I'm sorry, the Champions League winners.
Yeah, and I'm taking a player who is now part of that for Manchester City. Nikita Paris, 33 goals in 59 appearances. Lucy Bronze is probably viewed by many as their best player defender, who is really plays all over the place. And Steph Houghton will once again be the captain for this England team. They coasted through qualifying with the exception of a 0-0 draw against Wales. But I think the confidence is there. I think they're returning a lot of the same players from their previous success in 2015. Now, like you say, with France, it's on European soil. How, you know, that may have helped the women for the U.S. last time around that it was in North America. That could have a similar effect for England, not a far trip for their fan base. And they would be a team that I would be fearful of if the U.S. were to wind up against. France, too, also, and Germany, too. But
look, I think they're good, but I'm just, it, I don't know. There was a...
Look, you know I'm an Anglophile. I can't
so
help
am
it.
I, but
I can't help it.
But I'm in tune with the rhythms of English World Cup prep and some of the little catchphrases. Shouldn't fear anyone, things like that.
So you think, like, the cycle, so all of the stuff that happened for England's men's teams in the mid-2000s could now be, like...
Oh, I'm not saying that. Well, I actually think that this English team is better than some of those mid-2000s teams. This English women's team is better balanced. But I'm just saying, it's interesting to me.
Because the England men weren't able to truly succeed until there were no longer any expectations.
But
when the expectations are through the roof, that's when they fail. You think that we could be seeing a similar thing now for the England women.
The England women need to lose to Thailand or Iceland before they can really rise.
And then, JJ, the dark horses.
These are quite bright horses, actually, when I think about it.
Okay.
I was listening to the BBC Radio 5 Live preview of the Women's World Cup, and I was waiting to hear about the reigning European champions. And I waited and waited. And finally, towards the end, they got a mention. And I thought, why might they be so far down the list for discussion? Their rather circuitous qualification campaign seems to have taken the gloss off the fact that they romped to an outstanding European Championship win in 2017. They went through a 14 playoff for the final European berth for the World Cup. So I guess people are talking them down a little bit. This team plays in the grand Dutch traditions and is a wonderful team to watch from an attacking standpoint. They are the team that when the US aren't playing, you need to be watching them. They'll combine, pass, move, and look to play between the lines. Totally enjoyable football. Some of the names, by the way, are, I wouldn't say household names here in America, but certainly in European women's football they are. Lika Martins, Sherida Spitzer, Vivian Medeme, Danielle van der Donk, described by one of our own ESPN articles as the complete midfielder, which is high praise indeed. And of course, Lyon's representative, Shanice van der Sanden. They're all top-class midfield and attacking players. They have one of the youngest squads at the World Cup with an average age of 25 years of age. You think of where ours is trending.
Yeah.
Why not the Orange? Why can't they do it? And I went back because I watched the final, brilliant final against Denmark from 2017 in the European Women's Championship, and this was the final goal in the 4-2 win.
They are so nearly there with time running out. Here's Miedema. She's already scored once today. Can she seal the deal? Yes, she can! At the double in the final, the Netherlands champions. A seesaw final has seen them hit four past Denmark and become the new queens of Europe.
Yet the new queens of Europe are flying a little bit under the radar for a lot of people.
Well, according to Caesars, they're fifth. So after England, the odds for the Netherlands are next.
I really, maybe I'm completely colored by the fact that they are so entertaining to watch. And maybe the fact that they will concede goals and they're cavalier in their attitude works against them in terms of the odds.
Let's see, JJ. I went with a team that I actually mentioned already. And that is a very familiar foe for the U.S. women. And that is Sweden, who once again, predictably, are in the same group as the U.S. because it seems to happen every single time. Really, because it almost does. JJ, the U.S. and Sweden are grouped together for the fifth straight Women's World Cup and the sixth one overall. It's crazy. Now, here's the thing. The U.S. historically have a good record against Sweden. I think it's 21 wins, 6 losses. But here's the thing. They actually have a 3-match winless streak against Sweden, including the 2016 Olympics, where Sweden knocked the U.S. out, the earliest they've ever been knocked out in a major tournament,
which
in the quarterfinals.
Left a bitter taste.
It really did. Sweden's got experience, 6 players with over 100 caps. They know how to defend against the U.S., which we talked about, which it may not make for the most appealing watch. However, it can be effective. They're going to defend like crazy. And if they can get the United States on the counterattack, that is a thing that could potentially happen, especially, like we said, if the U.S. are bombing everybody forward, fullbacks, defensive midfielders. Sweden won their group in UEFA qualifying. They lost just twice in the last year. They are a dangerous team. They shared the Algarve Cup with the Netherlands, I believe. So there is reason for concern, I think, if you're somebody who is looking at potential dark horses and bogey teams for Sweden, because they know the U.S. well and they've played them well recently. So there you go.
Those are our teams to look out for.
Yep. There it is. It should be a fun tournament. We will, of course, be doing podcasts after U.S. games, so we'll be here on Tuesday next week to give you a podcast after the U.S. and Thailand. It should be fun, man. My expectations are understandably high. Do you have a pick? Do you actually want to make a selection now to win this?
I don't like to go against the U.S., but I think France are going to win it. I do feel that.
Well, I'm taking the U.S.
Okay. Does that make me a bad guy?
No. We're supposed to be objective.
And I am.
I can see that. I
correlated the data, and I think it's going to be France.
I'm taking the U.S., JJ.
Or maybe Scotland. It'll go on a romantic run to the final.
I'm bothered that the U.S. and France may wind up playing so early in the tournament.
Well, it depends. Maybe Sweden can put the fly in the ointment, send us second in the group, which everyone will bemoan initially, but maybe a good way for us to advance.
The England-Belgium conundrum in the Men's World Cup.
Correct.
Which benefited England enormously.
Completely.
Yeah. Right.
Let's not go down that road again.
No, of course not. So it's going to be fun. We're going to have coverage throughout the entire tournament. So please stick with us because we're going to have a great time. Hopefully, who knows? We might even have more moments like this.
Oh, in space!
Which came from the 2015 Women's World Cup.
We're in the 82nd minute, Andrew. Jamaica's still leading 1-0. We're going to go into a break now, though.
Yep, we got plenty more to go. We've got a big mailbag coming up. We've got a what to watch for, red card, man of the match, and our reaction to whatever continues to happen in the final moments of this U.S.-Jamaica friendly. Don't go anywhere. Back now.
Thank God we didn't do a pod about this.
JJ, during the break, while we're watching the game, because we don't have the volume up, obviously, because we're doing the show, you just kind of casually said to me, hey, pull up the stats and let's just see what's going on. And I did. And at the moment, the shots, which you can't solely go off
of in judging a game,
but sometimes it can be telling. The shots were 12-3 in favor of Jamaica, 4-0 on target. The U.S. have not registered a shot on target up to this point in the game. This is, like I said in the first part, nobody panic. This is not our first team, but this is,
all it would say is,
horrifying.
I hope you got your tickets cheap for Audi Field tonight.
Do you want to do a disappointment?
Do you want to do a mailbag? Come on.
Sure, yeah.
at CEO Soccer Pod, cutoffsidepod at gmail.com, cutoffside ESPN on the Instagrams.
Oh my God, another giveaway. It's just, it is so sloppy.
You know what's sloppy is your distraction on this podcast. How dare you? I'm about to do a mailbag.
Oh!
Save. Nobody needs to hear this. By the way, we have we need more followers on Instagram and on our Twitter. I know we much prefer listeners, which we have a lot of, but you know, go over to our social media and connect with us there. It's a fun and friendly space.
People really responded well to my emotional breakdown after the Tottenham Liverpool podcast.
They really did. Yeah, they enjoyed the croak in your voice. We're going to start with Rod Murphy in East Lansing, Michigan. Dear Spursy Andy and Never Walk Alone JJ, your hoarse voices the day after the Champions League final never sounded so good. Sure, the game was a scruffy affair, both a paucity and a dearth of memorable moments. But for all of us who have been for years now loyal listeners to the podcast, it was a chance to savour how your shared love of soccer convenes us as a community of listeners. Frankly, I am surprised the Hairy Lemon is still standing, but I dearly wish I could have been there for the event. Even if Tottenham and Liverpool never again play for such high stakes, may there be many more watch parties at which you get to see the loyalty you have inspired amongst your listeners. And please let the Caught Offside Cup continue. From all the reports, the fans from both teams had a grand time in Madrid and left behind a residue of much goodwill. That is very true, actually.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Not, well, we'll get to some not so much goodwill associated with English fans in a minute. Not all rivalries have to be bitter. Very true. So let the ablutions go on. You are each talented individuals, but this crazy partnership you've formed has a special chemistry and magic that is truly remarkable.
It's like next year's rap battle is going to have to be like some kind of, you know, friendship rap.
Count me in for the next 5 years of listening. Thank you very much, Mr. Rod Murphy. Wow. In Michigan. Zach Zimmerman. I first want to say thanks for hosting the Champions League final watch party. Even though, as a Tottenham fan, we didn't get result we were hoping for, it was a lot of fun being with Caught Offside community. You guys should definitely host more of these in the future. Plan to. I've been following the U20s pretty closely, and it looks like we have some real talent at that age. Considering how few spots are locked down on the senior men's team right now, oh boy, do you think it's a possibility that the 2022 World Cup team will have more players from the US 20 team than the summer's Gold Cup team?
Wow, what a question.
Yeah.
My gut is to say no. However, there will, like I said in the first part of the podcast tonight, there will be players that you're watching right now from this U20 side that are going to be on the next World Cup team. Tim Weah will be.
Yeah.
It was hard to watch Sebastian Soto and not think he will be, especially when you look at that position for us, like what has happened to Bobby Wood, where will Jozy Altidore be at that stage in his career? Oh, JJ. How? The U.S. Josh Sargent with registering the U.S.'s first shot on target.
In the 87th minute.
Came dangerously close to scoring, but a great save. Oh, man.
Oh, nice touch. Nice
very
turn
touch,
over
yeah.
Sharp. Something about, it's a bit of the Bergkamp about him. Now I'm really
Whoa.
Talking about
him. Oh, my God. Yeah, I mean, look, it's a valid question, but like you said in the first part, let's also not get too caught up with what the under 20 side are doing.
Well, if they're not starting for their clubs, are they adrift on the bench somewhere? Are they going to be there? Like, Bobby Wood is a case in point, a cautionary tale.
Right. And just remember how many young players, which is a good thing, how many young players are currently a part of the senior side? Pulisic, McKinney, Adams, just to name a few. Miazga, potentially. Really, almost most of them, with the exception of like Bradley, Josie, Well, Yedlin won't be a part of this Gold Cup team for unfortunate reasons with his injury. But
Yeah, I see your point.
There will be players, though. There will be.
We've had a plethora of tweets about an article. So Andy Mitten, who writes for ESPN FC, but also is an editor-at-large for 442 magazine, which was the magazine of choice when I was a kid, started in 94, started buying it, loved it. He went to visit Mexico to the second division to visit with Diego Maradona.
Oh, don't... Wait, are you doing something now?
It's Diego Maradona.
Yeah.
And what Diego Maradona said. Is that going to form part of a red card or man of the match?
No, better.
Can I keep talking about it or do you want me to stop?
How about... Can you save this? I have a 5 stars for 5 years review later in the podcast.
Saving it. Okay. Don't. Forget about it. Okay.
His name will come up.
Oh, good Lord. Matthew at Magnum PI Redoux. What is the cultural difference between the portion of England fans who are wont to make this kind of ruckus versus the LFC and Tottenham fans who produced a great showing in Madrid? That is one of the great questions. So tonight in Porto, ahead of England's Nations League semi-final clash with the Netherlands, there's been real crowd trouble amongst English fans. They've been charged with batons by the Portuguese police. They've been throwing bottles, singing anti-IRA songs, singing songs about the Second World War. And a lot of people are asking, why does this keep happening and why didn't it happen in Madrid? I would say the first thing is that the Liverpool and Spurs fans are regular travellers to Europe. This won't work these days. It's not the 1980s. If you're in the Champions League or European qualification, if you act the thug all the time, then it's a real problem and the fans are much better behaved. I think it's because England fans take a lot of fans up and down the road from places where teams aren't in Europe anymore. You know, teams don't get to travel from the lower leagues, your Oldhams, your Buries, your Leeds, you know, your Sheffield Wednesdays. I'm not tagging these clubs. I'm just saying clubs that aren't in the Premier League. I'm not saying those clubs had any, fans had anything to do with violence tonight. But there is an element that when they get abroad, it's all about empire and the Second World War and the IRA and the troubles in the North and all those things. They get beers in them. They feel as if they're a conquering army and away they go. There's a good documentary from World Cup 2006 from the BBC. And they talk about the hooligan mentality at the German World Cup. Guys, go and watch it on YouTube. It's very interesting. And it gets inside the mind of people who go abroad, sing these songs and throw bottles at the police. Mitchell in Ohio. I've been a long-time listener for probably about 2 years now and I rarely miss an episode. Lately at work, I've had to stay by myself until about 3 a.m. on Wednesday nights, cleaning things that we can't clean while open. And I found that listening to the pod is a great way to kill time and make it less quiet and boring. Is this good? I just wanted to send this into the mailbag to do a little humble brag. I went full Spursy Andy for the Champions League finale. I am a Liverpool supporter and sadly had to work during the final. So I completely shut myself away from every app for sports I have and Twitter, and I didn't see a single second of the game until I got off work and was able to watch my recording of the game. That's awesome. Wow. When people can execute in this modern digital world,
it's really tough, but it can be done.
Well done, Mitchell. Really, that's all I wanted to say. Thanks for making a great show every week for me to fill my boring life with sound. Your life's not boring. You just have a job that you have to listen to me and Andrew to get through.
Fair enough.
That's fine.
There are worse things.
There are worse things. You are valued and you are loved by us. This is from Anonymous. Got this on Saturday morning on my way to the Champions League final in the Hairy Lemon. One of the many reasons I love your podcast is because my close friend and I are also a Spurs and Liverpool fan. Of course, sensibly, I'm the Liverpool fan. Well, he decided to start dating my ex-girlfriend of 4 years a month after we broke up behind my back. I found out on Easter Sunday. Needless to say, we are not friends anymore, but this final seems like my chance at payback. Go Liverpool, be my karma, and erase the memory of Karius in last year's final, please.
So I guess he's laughing last?
He's laughing maniacally out the window.
So what, am I supposed to feel bad about being a Tottenham fan after that?
No.
I mean, what was the point of that, huh?
Just that Tottenham fans, you know,
can't be trusted.
Ethically and morally. Joking. And finally, you'll never walk alone, gentlemen, specifically JJ. Sorry, Andrew. How are you today? I am emailing to revel in Saturday's thrilling victory, basking in the red-tinged glow of supporting the European champions, Liverpool Football Club. Really, though, gents, I wanted to say thanks. I am a United States Marine who is currently deployed. I fell in love with Liverpool last year, and after watching them thoroughly dismantle Man City in the Champions League quarterfinals, and finally had a club to cheer on after years of following the competition that I feel is superseded only by the World Cup and college football's regular season. Interesting. It is also around that time that I discovered your podcast and have enjoyed listening ever since. The fun you have and the happiness you create in me when I listen to your reactions to the UCL semis was fantastic. Gents, I am thousands of miles away from my home and my wife. I have not been able to watch a single match live. I've only gotten to see highlights of games. I want to say thank you for giving me something to look forward to and to take my mind off home. It has been a blast to listen and follow the European soccer season unfold through your guys' podcast. I am really appreciative of that, and I hope you guys keep up the great work. I will finish by saying, JJ, I will drink a pint to you and our boys the next time I can. Andy, I want to say, as a fan of many American sports teams that have let me down over the years, I know the feeling, and I can say now that I truly do hope Tottenham get that elusive trophy here soon. Cheers, boys. That's from JD Smith, Lance Corporal, US Marine Corps.
That's very nice.
Yeah, we thank him for his service, and I raise a pint to you, sir, and maybe we can raise a pint together sometime.
Who, you and me? Or him and
me,
him?
You and, and JD. You're part of this too.
I'm so disengaged because it's now gone final.
This is disrespectful. That was a lovely email.
You were doing so.
And you're worried about the reggae boys and the lost boys.
You were rolling over there. I thought I could just kind of hone in on the U.S. just lost to Jamaica, and it was just so bad. There was one more.
Oh, these reactions. Get out of the ground. What are you standing around for, biting your fingers, hoping the TV cameras comes across you, American outlaws? Get out of there and have a pint.
Boy, just such a, like, ugh. Again, it's not,
a friendly.
It's not a game to overreact to, but it was just such a bummer of a performance before.
We don't need the drama. Twitter, please. We don't need the drama. Guys in the stands, we don't need the drama. It's an experiment that didn't go right tonight. Thank you, JD Smith, by the way, and I apologize for Andrew phasing out.
4 minutes into stoppage time, Georgi Mihailovic had a move where he broke through, got into the penalty area, was almost kind of sort of one-on-one with the keeper, but his last touch let him down, kind of befitting of the night overall. Sounds like Dwayne Holmes was really the only bright spot for the U.S. in this game. Maybe a performance like that could be enough to get him onto the 23-man squad, but boy, there's... I don't know what you do if you're Berhalter after a game like that. If this was a night where you're supposed to look at certain performances and make decisions, is it just a matter of, like, who was the least bad that I can bring with me? Because this was rough. And for Venezuela on Sunday, I'm wondering now, so do they go with, like, how much of their A squad do they now, they've got to play at least one game together with his preferred 11. Now, I don't think all of them will be there. I don't think Tyler Adams arrives in the U.S. until next Tuesday. We'll have to see. I mean, I remember these Gold Cups under Jurgen Klinsmann, and it was like the group stage. He was still testing things out.
Sure.
So maybe that's just the nature.
You can.
But they've got to be careful. Like, we always say that. Like, find your squad.
Guyana, you worried about them?
I'm worried about everything. I have a what to watch for here. I don't really have much to say about it, but I do want to mention that the UEFA Nations League, Thursday, 2:45, the Netherlands and England. Today, Cristiano Ronaldo, what can you say about him? But
It wasn't a great Portuguese performance, and yet he pulls out a hat-trick.
His performance was pretty good. He has a hat-trick. Portugal defeats Switzerland 3-1.
Too much VAR. Too much VAR.
And lengthy
VAR and VAR for incidental contacts. I'm going back on what I said on Twitter. I don't think it was a penalty for the Swiss. Although to say they didn't deserve an equaliser would be wrong. And it was brilliant from Ronaldo then by the way, the goal he finished at the near post where he sweeps it home. Guys, that's striker at the peak of his powers. And he's not. He's 34. Unbelievable.
But the one that he scored after that even... He scored the 88th and the 90th, the one where he bent it. Yeah, where he cuts in and then bends it.
Great goal, but
such a Ronaldo goal.
But as a striker's goal, I prefer the other one. Yeah. I'm nitpicking.
I'm talking about aesthetics.
All right,
it was more aesthetically pleasing to watch it curl.
Oof, I don't know
to watch it curl
know,
to hear the
man.
Bend.
Yeah, but to catch it as it's bouncing up and then drive it low into the keeper.
Netherlands and England should be interesting. It's so funny with Netherlands, how quickly it looks like this turnaround has occurred, because now I'm starting to think about it, and I'm starting to think about the next 10 years, potentially, of Van Dijk and De Ligt in the central defense for the Netherlands.
And even some of their older players, like Depay, it's not that old. He's only in his mid-20s. You know, he's had a stuttering start to his career. Now he's been linked with Liverpool, linked with Paris Saint-Germain, so many different clubs.
These Tottenham players that are on England, like, they're going to go out on the field and be like, oh God, him again, Van Dijk. Oh God, can't we escape you? Let's see.
Should be an interesting game.
I mentioned Women's World Cup, JJ. It kicks off Friday, 3 o'clock, France and South Korea, and then we're off and running every day. There's games up until the knockout rounds. MLS, it's a lesser, lighter weekend, but there is still a couple games worth watching. Friday, 7 o'clock, Toronto FC and Sporting Kansas City.
See who Toronto picked up.
Omar Gonzalez.
Mm.
Back in the USA, or Canada.
But back in the U.S. League is the point.
Yeah. Yeah, very interesting. We'll see how that works out for Toronto. Also, this one Saturday, 7:30, the Philadelphia Union and the New York Red Bulls. Philadelphia with a good performance over the weekend. They have been maybe the pleasant surprise of the season so far. Rivalry match. We'll see if they can keep it going. And the friendly we talked about, the U.S. and Venezuela, Sunday at 2 o'clock. A couple other games also that I didn't have on here, but the U.S. under-20s. Saturday, 11:30 a.m., U.S. and Ecuador.
Nice.
For a spot in the semifinals.
Ecuador apparently better than their group stage suggests, so that's going to be interesting.
And then also the winner of Netherlands and England will face Portugal. That is Sunday, midday.
Also, big European Championship qualifier for the Republic of Ireland, away to Denmark again, because we have to play Denmark. It is so decreed.
It's your U.S. women versus Swedish women.
Imagine, had them in the Nations League, had them in World Cup qualifying, have them again in European Championship qualifying.
Let's see, JJ, I want to get to this straight away here.
Red card.
So let's talk about this. I gave it just essentially to the Neymar situation. Let's go through it. So basically every single aspect of this situation has been bad. Obviously, we'll start with the accusation against Neymar, which, if true, would land him in prison, potentially. Then from there, you have Neymar's potentially illegal decision to mount his own defense in an Instagram video, which reveals extremely sensitive information about the accuser. Then earlier today, there's the confusion over just what the charge is against Neymar in the first place. This is from The Independent. They write, the Brazilian lawyers who first represented an unidentified woman who was accused Neymar of rape say that her initial complaint charged she was a victim of aggression or physical violence by the player, though they added that doesn't mean authorities couldn't pursue a prosecution in the case as she reported it to police. The attorneys said in a statement they believe their former client has solid evidence she suffered what they referred to as physical violence at a Paris hotel on May 15th. Later, one of the attorneys added that a private medical report obtained by the woman showed she had bruises, scratches, anxiety, and depression. He declined to show the report. As to the allegations of rape, that was new to members of our law firm, the lawyers said in a statement. Authorities will decide whether it happened or not. They might have a different interpretation from ours. So, JJ, now the accuser's new attorney is accusing the former legal team of this woman of betraying their client in every possible way. So it's... it's chaos.
It's a shambles.
And here's the thing. So here's what we don't know. Whether or not a crime between Neymar and the woman actually took place. But here's what we do know. Everything that you're seeing here is why women hesitate to come forward in the first place. From so many different ends. Neymar's most prominently among them. This has been handled so poorly and has taken on such a circus-like feel to it that you can understand why the accuser's initial desire was simply to pursue this in civil court, keep media attention at a minimum. And, you know, I know that there will be people who will come at me and say, well, if Neymar didn't do this, he has a right to defend himself, which is certainly true. Look, I know it might be hard for Neymar to do this, but you have a legal team for a reason, to defend yourself through the proper legal channels. So now, because whether or not he's innocent, he still now may have committed a second crime that is being investigated by Brazil's cyber crime division when he posted this Instagram video. It's why you have to defend yourself through legal channels. And it just goes to show that this whole thing has been handled from everyone, legal teams included, so poorly. So poorly.
You've laid it all out there. I don't have a whole ton to say except to agree with you, but I will go back to things we've heard before in the past about Neymar, specifically about those who advise him. Who is in control here? Because nobody with any common sense would ever, the first thing they would have said is you do not go near social media and essentially, like you said, potentially commit another crime by giving out sensitive information on Instagram. That is wild to me.
And here's an overriding thing. And it's interesting timing to be talking about this because it's the same day that the rape lawsuit against Cristiano Ronaldo has shifted from being simply a civil case to now being a federal case. Sam Borden writes here that the woman accusing Cristiano Ronaldo of raping her has shifted the venue for her legal charges against the football superstar, dropping her case in Nevada state court. So not civil court, state court, but filing identical charges in federal court, according to her attorney. So without even getting into that here, I mean, here's the problem. So who are the three, give or take, but the three faces of the sport?
Messi, Ronaldo, Neymar.
And Neymar. And two of the three faces of the sport right now are embroiled in some kind of rape accusation. It's terrible. It's terrible for the game. It's terrible for the image of the game. And if these guys did it, it's terrible for all those involved. So that's it. And we'll obviously continue to see what happens with both of these cases. But it's just, it's bad. And then I see Neymar today showing up at Brazil training in his Mercedes helicopter. It's just like, get a clue, man.
I know, but like these, who is advising him? Who is his inner circle? Because let's be honest, since the move to PSG, including the move to PSG possibly, they've done everything wrong. Everything.
Yeah. What do you have?
This is from the BBC. Esperance have been ordered to return the African Champions League trophy and to replay the second leg of the final. I read that first line and I thought, Andrew's absolute dream would be Liverpool have been ordered to return the Champions League final. The Tunisian side led 1-0 in Saturday's second leg, but Moroccan opponents Wydad Casablanca left the pitch after an equaliser they scored was disallowed. Wydad wanted the video assistant referee to check if the goal should stand, but the system was not working. Ugh. The Confederation of African Football, CAF, said the second leg will be played at a neutral venue. The 1-1 draw from the first leg in Morocco stands. The replay will be after the Africa Cup of Nations in Egypt, which ends on the 19th of July. A CAF statement said conditions of game and safety were not met in the second leg and made clear Esperance players must return their winners' medals as well as the trophy. Play in the second leg was halted after Wydad thought they had equalised on 59 minutes through Walid El Karti's header. It was disallowed for infringement. The VAR system was visible on the side of the pitch. Now, if you look at the picture, it's literally like, remember one of those old arcade games with the hoods over it? Yeah. It looks like a battered one of those that's been unplugged and had not been told. But the players, this is the worst thing about it. The players had not been told it was not in use because of a malfunction. Why don't you just say at the start of the game, guys, here's the situation. VAR is not working. We will not be using it tonight. Are you agreeing to play? If you're not, we have to figure another date. If you are, let's just play without it.
That feels a little amateurish to me.
Terribly amateur.
But I'm saying even your suggestion.
But what else could they do? You can't not tell the players that that's exactly what they did. They had every right to walk off. Mm-hmm. If you expect VAR to be used, and that's what you've played under in the first leg, and it's not there, what a joke. Yeah. I just have the vision of cups and medals being returned. How do you even do that? Do you kind of reverse moonwalk up the podium, take it off and give it back?
I'm like, sure that's what they did.
Do you lift it in the air and then put it down, the cup? No? You're not enjoying any of this shtick?
No, I'm still kind of watching the coverage of the...
First you ignore J.D. Smith, and now you...
I didn't ignore J.D. Smith. We're going to have a pint.
All right.
Caught offsides, man of the match.
Let's see, JJ. I went with Lennart Johansson. It's fitting to me that in this time where debates are being held about this Super League replacing the Champions League, we take time to honor the man who essentially created the Champions League. I'm reading here from The Guardian. Lennart Johansson, who oversaw the introduction of the Champions League during a 17-year reign as president of European football's governing body, has died. He was 89. Johansson said creating the Champions League to replace the European Cup was his proudest achievement at UEFA. It evolved into club football's most lucrative and prestigious competition with expansion that saw non-domestic champions given the entry. In addition to that, JJ, he also ran for FIFA president against everybody's favorite president, Sepp Blatter, in 1998, but narrowly lost and then became a loud voice against Blatter, accusing him of corruption and vote buying. Two things that we can get on board with. The father of the Champions League, JJ, Lennart Johansson, dead at the age of 89. Wanted to pay respect to him for creating what is such an... I mean, after the World Cup, is it like the most prestigious competition in the world? I don't know. I guess Copa America fans would take umbrage with that.
Of course they would. We consider us Europhiles consider it as the biggest club competition in the world. But, I mean, he revamped it into what it is now. In 1992, 93, we had the group stages, and it was what we know it as today, pretty much exactly.
Yeah.
And it used to be knockout. Imagine. Straight knockout.
Wow.
Woof.
But yeah, so I wanted to get that mention in there. By the way, speaking of the Super League, I saw now the Bundesliga and the Premier League are kind of uniting in a force against it. So it's almost at a point now, and I know La Liga, I think, is against it as well. It's really Italy that is carrying the mantle for this.
Italy, Manchester City, and PSG. Don't let them off the hook. Do not let them off the hook.
But I'm just saying, but if the Premier League and the Bundesliga are both against it, then just like say, okay, go ahead with your Super League and see how it does without our teams.
Yeah.
Who's going to take it seriously? The Champions League, I'm talking about Lennart Johansson, it's so good.
It's perfect.
It's just so good.
Yep. Look, it's not perfect, obviously, because you would like to extend the franchise to other countries a little bit more, that we could see a little more, bit more diversity.
It's fine.
But we still see it's as good as it's going to be in the modern era of soccer. Yep. And look, we love it. Absolutely love it.
What do you have?
My man of the match is Daniel Sturridge. And I just want to play one of his final, well, not his final, it was back in September, but one of his best goals, certainly, for Liverpool against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge in that crucial equaliser late on. If you can play this, it was one of my favourite goals by him. And Sturridge has decided that, well, the club have decided that he will move on from Liverpool. Where to, we don't know, but this is going to be one of my fondest memories.
Alexander-Arnold waving for the ball on the right-hand side. Here's Shaqiri, Daniel Sturridge with the cut! Has provided a contender for goal of the season already. What a moment!
An incredible haul of goals from a guy who struggled for so long in the red shirt to be fit and to play regularly. We'll always remember that SAS partnership, Suarez and Sturridge, from the 13-14 championship run that Liverpool put together. He never quite hit those peaks again because injury really eroded his ability to be on the field long enough. And I think a stylistic clash with Klopp and what he wanted to do definitely didn't help either. But I just wanted to ask you, Daniel Sturridge, I will remember with nothing but fondness, a bit of sadness that he was injured as much as he was, but is there a player you think of your sporting life that, for whatever reason, didn't quite fit, divided opinion in your club, but you loved him? And he gave you so many good moments. I'm not talking Iverson, who was a stone cold legend.
He doesn't fit the
or even Deshaun Jackson, who was a stone cold legend for the Eagles. Who was this kind of, just this the player that a lot of people probably, when you're talking about your legends, won't utter him in that same breath.
I mean, I always loved Eric Snow. That's a tough one.
Is there
the top
a Tottenham player that fitted that bill for you? Dempsey, probably. I mean,
well, yeah, but I was so hugely biased, that it's almost not fair to even use him. But because he is actually a guy who, like, some Tottenham fans didn't think much of, but he scored. He, like, in a short time, he scored so many big goals for him. I mean, I was going to say Aaron Lennon because at the end there were a lot of Tottenham fans that were over him, but I loved him right till the end. If I had a little bit more time to think about it, I don't know. Michael Dawson was kind of that player, but every Tottenham fan loved him because he cared so much and got the most out of really having no kind of physical athletic attributes.
Ledley King?
Well, no, he is.
He's a legend, even though, I mean,
injuries held him back from maybe what he could have been. But no, he's a Tottenham. He's a Tottenham.
I don't know. I love all those. Far too many, like, how would you call them? Amateur physicians or amateur athletic trainers who were on Twitter yesterday chirping wasted talent and shame he
That's so unfair.
It really is fair, but like, as if, and also the criticism that, oh, the slightest pain he wouldn't play. He had chronic injuries. How do you know?
People have decided that he just didn't care enough. Like, who are you to make that judgment? I'll be so curious where he goes next.
It's one of my only criticisms of Jurgen Klopp, was that he said what he said two seasons ago, where he said Daniel has to know what, you know, how to play through real pain. I thought that was beyond the pale. You can't say things like that.
So there you go, JJ. That is pretty much our show, but we do have one more thing. So many people have been asking for this, so I felt like we had to give the people.
Oh, my God.
Want. 5 stars for 5 years. Memory of the week. We've gotten a lot of submissions for this one. I'm going to read just one of the posts. This is from Jetik, who posted, "Hands down, my favorite moment so far has been the Diego Maradona clip. I haven't laughed that hard, and every time it pops up, I can't get it out of my head the rest of the day." So to Jetik and all the others, here you go. This is from back in November 26th of 2018.
Here's your 5 stars for 5 years memory of the week on Caught Offside.
Let's see. My red card. Oh, JJ. Diego Maradona. So he, I guess just to set the scene of what I'm about to play for you, he was being interviewed at a Liga MX match. And he
Division
was,
2, let's be honest.
Oh, okay. And so he was basically asked for his take on the quality of Liga MX.
Hmm.
Here's his response, if you even want to call it that.
Estando acá, Diego, me imagino que has visto también más el fútbol de la Liga MX de Primera División. Lo has observado más de cerca, me imagino, aunque ya algo lo conocías. ¿Qué piensas de la Liga MX, de su nivel?
No,
Do you remember? There's two things that come to mind with this. You remember the character that has been retired for no good reason on Family Guy. He was the posh Massachusetts guy, or maybe posh Rhode Island person. He was James L. Bottomtoother. I think that's what he was called.
Yeah,
and he used to go...
like,
or it reminds me of when they take the Quaaludes on Wolf of Wall Street and... Diamond Donnie Azoff is trying to say Steve Madden, and
he can't speak.
Steve Madden,
like he couldn't. They didn't ask him to.
He didn't say a word.
He couldn't fake it. He couldn't just give a stock answer. Oh well, this league is a great league and it's been around for many years. It's prominent. And I love what. Like he couldn't say anything. He could only say this. The poor guy asking the question must have been like, did I just ask the world's most difficult question? Like, his producer must have needed to assure him afterwards that no, that was not in any way, shape, or form difficult.
That wasn't a curveball.
That is weird.
Unbelievable. Now, Maradona has a well documented history with substances. Cocaine being one of them.
Are you implying something?
I'm not. I'm just suggesting that maybe he's... I don't know. I don't want to do that, but I can't explain. We know people in this industry who have what we call meaty pauses between their answers.
No, this is hardly that.
So you'll ask a question. You go, oh, well, what do you think of the strength of Liga MX? Well, and they'll start like that. And even then you might roll your eyes. This is beyond meaty pausing.
Like, if they had asked him his thoughts on the theory of relativity and he answered that way, I would have said, do better than that. But this was just saying, what do you think of the quality of this league? Wow.
This has been your 5 stars for 5 years memory of the week.
That is such a classic.
Oh, that never will ever get old. I might just get a t-shirt with Maradona's face from that interview on the front and on the back.
Oh my God. So yeah, there you go. A lot of people asked for that one.
So Andy Mitten interviewed him for 442.
Yes, yeah.
And he said in the most throwaway fashion, oh, I like Man United. Hey, I hear they're looking for a manager. I'd do it. I'd certainly sell a lot of t-shirts around the world.
Here,
read it, yeah.
He said, if Manchester United need a coach, I'm the man to do it. I know they sell lots of shirts around the world, but they need to win trophies too. I can do that for them. He also said that Manchester United used to be my favorite English team for so long. So many great players and a great team under Alex Ferguson. But now I have to say Man City. I know you shouldn't change like that, but it's because of Kun Aguero. We speak a lot and he plays a very good team.
This was the most throwaway comments ever, guys. I don't want you tweeting at me. He's not going to be Manchester United manager.
No.
It's not happening.
Imagine the team talk. De Gea, you're in goal. And then as we get out the field, the centre back, Smalling, and then... Do you ever watch the two guys look at each other? They do. They're such
the guys doing the interview.
The ESPN Deportes guys. They're such pros, and they're looking at each other, and they're just giving each other the stare. You know, the nodding, as if something profound is going to happen. Yet,
I mean, do you jump in and help him? Do you just let him drown like he's doing there?
You got to get in there, don't you? You got to break up the la. The lie. You gotta get in there.
You're humiliating him, though. You have to give him a chance to save himself. I think they were hoping that eventually he'll kind of like snap, come to.
I would have gone straight away. Or is that a rule? I would have gone, Diego, halfway through the lie. La. Diego, is that a silly question considering all the great leagues you've played in Spain, etc., etc.?
He couldn't answer
and you're,
that, though.
You're hoping then he riffs about Barcelona or something like that, or Napoli.
Eventually, you'll just be reduced to like, you'll keep trying to simplify the question more and more, and eventually you'll just be like, Diego, tell us about your house. Like, do you have a chair you like? How much simpler could it get?
Remember we met a listener at the weekend from Long Island, and she's Italian, and her dad's a Napoli fan. So they're going to be tuning into the new documentary that's coming out soon about Maradona.
It looks really good.
It looks amazing.
Yeah.
And I just thought of that, you know?
Yeah. So there you go. As always, you can submit your... iTunes review. iTunes is not going to be a thing anymore, so I don't know what that means for reviews.
Ugh.
Oh, I guess you don't need to do it on iTunes. It's like on Apple Podcasts. You can just at the bottom of the feed.
It's Apple Podcasts. Don't worry about iTunes.
Stop. Yeah, yeah.
We should call it Apple Podcast Reviews.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So leave your 5 stars. Leave your review. We've loads to get through.
Right, and in the review, leave if you have a favorite memory from the 5 years of the podcast, like we've been doing. We'll try to find it and play it for you. There's a bunch more good ones.
Overwhelming Maradona support.
Yeah, yeah, but yeah, that one just knocked a lot of the people out who were making their submissions. That was a favorite, apparently. Well, hey, this was fun, man. To you, I say. See you later.
La.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.